Good morning. So one of my best friends in the world tells me that I remind him of his mother, which is a weird thing to tell someone. I'm not really sure how I feel about that. She sounds very handsome. And he goes on to say that it's because whenever you asked my mom a question, she would always answer the exact question that you asked her. And sometimes like it'd get her in trouble because people don't actually want you to answer the question they ask. You know, and I find that, somehow along the way, everyone gets a memo on which questions you're supposed to answer honestly and which questions you're not supposed to. And I missed the memo because I tend to always answer questions honestly, and I never know. And, someone's asking me a question now. Is this one of those questions I'm not actually supposed to answer? I don't really always know. You know, it's like you go to someone's home and you're eating dinner and they've had you over there. They're being very hospitable. And halfway through dinner, they're like, by the way, this is the first time I've ever made this. How is it? And you're like, I don't know if I'm supposed to answer honestly right now or not. Or it's like, I'll see someone. I'm like, oh, did you get a haircut? Yeah, I got a cut yesterday. What do you think? Wait here, I'm going to go pull the fire alarm because I don't know what else to do in this moment because this seems like one of those questions I'm not actually supposed to answer. Sometimes we ask questions that we don't want or like the answer to. And we ask questions of ourselves, you know, about ourselves. Man, why do I always? And we don't like or want the answer. And we ask questions of God. God, why did you allow? Why is this happening? Why isn't that happening? Why is this season of my life feeling like? And he gives us an answer. And maybe it's the answer we didn't want or we didn't like. But that's exactly what happened to Habakkuk last week. Is that we're in this series and it's 3 weeks in the book of Habakkuk. And last week was Habakkuk asking God hard questions. He says, God, why is it that I look around me and the world seems violent and it's not going well and people are getting ahead on the backs of each other and they're lying and they're killing and they're stealing and it feels like you're doing nothing. Why is that? He asked him a question he didn't actually want the answer to because God answered him. And he says, you're right. You and I agree. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to send this empire, the Babylonian Empire, and they're going to come in and they're going to overthrow your country and it's going to be hard, it's going to be painful, there's going to be abuse and violence and pillaging and then Habakkuk's like, what? How could this be? Like, why could you allow this? Like, we're bad, but we're not as bad as them. Like, we have our problems, but they have more problems. How could you allow this? And he ends by saying, I'm going to just sit here and wait until you answer. And we were talking about last week how at first that feels like defiant. Like, I'm going to sit here and wait till you answer me. But really what was going on, he's like, he had no other options. Every other thing that he possibly could have leaned on other than God was taken from him. And the only option he had was to ask God that exact hard question. And sometimes it feels like asking God hard questions is defiance. But really asking God hard questions is reliance. And the size of your God will determine the size of your questions. Like if you worship a small God, and how your understanding of God is a God that can't handle or is intimidated by big questions, and you're going to ask him, intimidated by small questions, and he's going to ask small questions of him. And so then we have, in Habakkuk chapter 2 today, we have God's response. So Habakkuk asks a question, God responds. Habakkuk asks another question, and God responds. And this now is God's response to Habakkuk's second questions. And this is God sort of like letting him know, like, why would you allow these Babylonians to overthrow us? Why would you choose them? Like, what's going on? Like, doesn't it feel like the bad people are advancing and the people who aren't quite as bad are falling behind? And this is God's response. I'm going to pick it up in verse 2. Because in verse 2, it says this. Then the Lord said to me, write my answer plainly on tablets so that a runner can carry the correct message to others. This vision is for a future time. It describes the end, and it will be fulfilled. If it seems slow in coming, wait patiently, for it will surely take place. It will not be delayed. And what you have in this passage, what's happening here is God is preparing Habakkuk to tell him the answer. Like Habakkuk asks his question, and he hasn't even answered the question yet. But what he's telling him is that this experience is not going to happen in the timeline that you would pick. Like it's going to, there's going to feel like you're going to enter into a season of waiting. It's going to feel like you're entering into a season where everything feels delayed. And he says, but wait patiently, for it will surely take place. It will not be delayed. And so it's this breakdown between how Habakkuk felt about what's happening and what was actually happening. Habakkuk's like, man, like I just want to know, like if this is going to happen, if this is inevitable, let's just like rip the Band-Aid and get it over with. And God says, no, it's going to take a little while. Habakkuk had to enter into the season of waiting. The thing about waiting is that we never, ever like it. Like it's part of our culture, it's part of our DNA, the idea of waiting on timing or waiting on the right timing for something. We never like this. It's never a situation where we're like, yes, I get to wait now. I get to sort of like wait for the right time. I used to be a youth pastor and I would have like, you know, teenagers and the teenagers get older and, you know, they'd be college students and college students become young adults. And I remember having young adults and then being like, I would really like to have someone in my life. I'm single and I just feel like I'm in the season of waiting and I want that person. And they feel like they're waiting and they're constantly waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting for the job to hit and they're waiting for that person to come into their life and whatever, in this season of waiting. And I always tell them, you can either sit here and wait and do nothing, you can feel like this waiting season is completely and utterly passive, or you can wait actively. So I believe that God gives us what we need when we need it. He gives us what we want when it's best for us to have it. But you are not waiting on that person or that thing to come into your life. God is waiting on you to be ready for that thing. And what happens in our life is when we are waiting, we feel like there is nothing happening, but there's always something happening. See, our waiting time, that's God's working time. Like we believe that we can grow and we can align with God and we can gain intimacy with him and we can just do that as we go through life and as we experience life. And man, I'm doing my thing, I'm living my life, and I'm just gonna grow and take steps towards him and I'm just gonna become a truer person, of more aligned with who God made me to be. But when you grow, there's almost always a time of like slowing down, of like, oh my goodness, I just realized something true about myself. I have to sort of respond to this, and that always slows us down in our tracks. And so when we enter into seasons of waiting, like Habakkuk is here, like maybe you've experienced in your life of, man, I can't wait for this season I'm in to be over. I can't wait for that next season to begin. I can't wait to have that thing, that job, that relationship, that, you know, that financial stability, that whatever that is. Like if you're in a season of waiting and I can't wait for this season to end and that season to begin, you can either be in this season passively or you can be in this season actively. But if you're in this season actively, your waiting time becomes God's working time. You know, a friend of mine says that the breakthrough always comes after the breakdown. You have to go through these seasons where we're broken down a little bit, or we have to slow down a little bit. But then once we slow down slow enough, long enough for God to work and to shape and to mold and to change us, that's when that breakthrough comes. We have to go through the breakdown before we can hit the breakthrough. And so what you have here is God's like, just wait a second, slow down, like write the message down. It will come in a future time. It will happen. It won't delay. It is coming, but it won't be at the time you want. But I am good and I am faithful and it will come. Keep going in verse 4. It says, and by the way, this verse 4 kind of outlines the entire chapter. The entire chapter breaks down into these two sort of categories of people. Verse 4 says, all right, there's this type of person and there's this type of person. And God's going to respond differently to these people. Verse 4 says, look at the proud, first type of person. They trust in themselves and their lives are crooked. But the righteous will live by their faithfulness to God. And what you have is you have Habakkuk, and he's in the hardest time of his life. He's in this moment when he feels like his life is crumbling. He doesn't understand why things are happening the way that they're happening. And he's asking God for clarity, and God is saying, wait. But then he says, but the righteous will live by their faith. And there is almost no time harder to have faith and to be faithful than in moments like this when you feel like life is crumbling around you. And here's the thing about faith. Having faith in God, walking faithfully, is it feels like amorphic, like ethereal. Like it's hard to get your arms around faithfulness. Like, all right, if I'm being faithful now, how would you know? You can't see. You can't really see faithful. And tomorrow morning, like when you wake up a Monday morning and you go about your business and you go about your daily life, like what does faithful Monday versus non-faithful Monday actually look like? How does someone look at this and say, the righteous will live by faith? Okay, I can now apply that to my life. I know what that means. Got it. Nailed it. It's hard to know what faithfulness looks like. So to understand faithfulness in this context, you have to go to this passage in Psalms 119:105. Psalms 119:105 says this: Your word is a lamp to my guide, is a lamp to guide my feet and a light to my path. Your word is a lamp to guide my feet and a light to my path. And then actually this verse is three different promises. So what you have here is a headlamp to guide my feet. And what you have here is when right now, as I'm talking to you, as I hold this lamp in front of my feet, I can see clearly about a foot in front of my feet. And so if I'm walking in pitch darkness, and really this breaks down because there's a light here, but if I'm in pitch darkness and I'm using this lamp at my feet, I can see about a foot in front of my feet. And so if I'm going to only stay in the light, I'm going to walk a foot. And as I walk, the light moves forward a foot because it's moving with me. And so I have a foot and I take this foot. And I have a foot and I take this foot. And I have a foot and I take this foot. And this oftentimes is what faithfulness looks like. By the way, do you know what's more attractive than headlamps? Everything. Because you have this headlamp and you have a lamp to your feet. Like right now, I have a foot in front of me. And there are seasons in life when that's exactly what life will be like, where it's going to feel like, man, I have more questions than answers. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's happening. Like, how do I move forward? How do I even process and move forward from this? And God says, no, I'm with you. Like, I'm going to give you a foot in front of you. You're going to know that right in front of you that I'm going to give you a foot, and you are supposed to take that foot. And faithfulness to me in this moment is you taking that foot, taking that one foot of light that you have in front of him. He's a lamp to guide our feet. But the thing about this season of being a lamp to our feet is every time we take a foot, God has to show up again and give us one more foot, and we take that foot. And he has to show up again. And these seasons, when we are feeling like we only have a foot at a time, are the times when we feel like God is most distant, but God is the most present because he put himself on the hot seat. He has to give us that foot, every foot. This is the moment when it feels like God is most distant, but he is most present. We take that foot, and he gives us a foot. But the next thing that happens here is that then they see in the path is I'm a lamp to my feet. Then you have light to my path. I'm going to try not to blind some people here right now. But there you go. This is light to my path. And what you have is there are seasons in life when we know what the next season coming looks like. And faithfulness in this moment, if I know what this season is, if I know where I'm at in life and God is calling me to take this path and I have light for the entire path, then faithfulness is me walking this path. It's not one foot in front of me. It's not God shows up and I take that foot. God shows up and I take that foot. God has shown up and he's shown me the next season of my life. And what's funny is sometimes this is the time when God is most distant because he said, hey, this is what the next season of your life looks like. This is what your life is. Walk this. You be faithful. You walk this season. You walk in this vision for your life I've called you to. And he allows us to walk in that. But this is the time when we feel like, oh, God's with me. Things are good. Things are awesome. Because we equate God's presence from times that God is good. But he said, no. You got this. You know where you're going. Here's a light for your path. And this is the third promise of this verse. You see, he says there are times in your life when I'll be a lamp to your feet. He says there'll be times in your life when I am a light to your path. And the third promise is this, is that there'll be times in your life when there's seasons of your life when both are present. Like there'll be a season in your life when you feel like I get a foot, let me take a foot. I get a foot, let me take a foot. And there'll be seasons of your life when he gives you a path and he says, take this path. And when you're in a foot by foot season, you feel like that season will never end. But the third promise is that he'll be light for both seasons. So if you're in a season when, man, life is hard, you have more questions than answers, you don't know what's going on, and he gives you a foot and you walk a foot, rely and lean on the promise that this season will not last forever. There is a new day coming down the road. God promises that. And what you have in this passage is a Habakkuk who is at his worst, who is struggling. He is in his foot by foot season. He's like, God, I don't know what to do. The only thing I know what to do is to just cry out to you and ask you my big questions. That is one foot. And then God answers him. And he's like, all that did is give me more questions. Let me ask you more questions. That's that foot. See, sometimes living by faith, it feels mystical or miraculous or like disconnected from our daily life. But it's not actually. Because I feel like in those moments, God will always be with us. God will always walk with us. He will always give us something, always give us right now, this moment, what do I do? And for some of us in life, it's like, all right, life is crumbling. My job, my career, is not going well. What can I possibly do? I can still, if you're a father or a mother, I can still raise my children well. Or if my family's not going well, you say, God, what are you calling me to? Like my family is struggling. My family is falling apart. What can I do well? I can do community in my church well. I can lean into that more. Because these seasons, when we're like waiting these seasons out, you know, I'm in a foot by foot season and I'm just waiting and I'm waiting, I'm waiting. Those are the seasons when God is working. Because the breakdown always becomes before the breakthrough. So this is what faithfulness looks like. When he says here in verse 4, he says, but the righteous will live by their faithfulness to God. He's saying, when I give you a foot, you take that foot. When I give you a path, you take that path. And we go further on in the passage. And actually, after this verse 4, what happens is God gives Habakkuk these five woe statements. And you're going to see them here on the screen in a second. And these five woes, God says, are the empathetic prayers that the people who are captives will pray for their captors. That's confusing. So what you have is God's talking to Habakkuk, and God says, Habakkuk, what's going to happen is they're going to come in, they're going to take your people captive, and once they've taken you captive, your people will have these five prayers that are empathetic. They're having empathy for the people who have taken them captive. And you'll see them here on the screen. You know, the first one is this: woe to him who piles up stolen goods. This is the people who are captives praying empathetically for the people who are taking them captive. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors until they are drunk. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life. That's about idolatry. Like they've made idols out of wood, and now they're saying, come to life and do something for me. And it's weird. It's like this weird sort of point in this book where God is like taking this like 15 verses, and he's saying, all right, when your people are in captivity, they're going to pray these prayers to people who are their captors. And you're like, why would they be praying these empathetic prayers for these people who are taking them captive? Like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, woe to you, woe to you, woe to you. It's because when you have people who are violent or abusive or take advantage of other people, it feels like that person has won. It feels like this person wins and this person loses. The person who does the abuse, it feels like, oh, they get to abuse and they go off for the rest of their life and they're happy and they're hunky-dory and life is good for them. But I'm over here and I'm stuck in this place where I'm hurt and I'm bitter and I feel like I'm not worth anything. Or these people, there's violence or they're getting one over or they're taking advantage. And I'm over here and I've just been taken advantage of. And I feel like they did the wrong thing and now they get to win. It's not fair. And what God is saying here in these woes is that when it feels like someone gets to win through evil processes, or when someone's abusive and they just get to go on with their life, or when someone gets to like take advantage and just they win and I'm over here left in a puddle, they didn't win. Because those sorts of behaviors, those activities, when you make choices like that, it rots you from the inside out. So these people who have just experienced this abuse and this captivity, they're looking at these people and they feel sorry for them because they know something they don't know is that these people traded the short term for the long term. They said, yes, I'm going to get one over now. I'm going to win now. I'm going to trade the short term now. But it's going to rot them from the inside out. And so these people, even though they are captive to these people, feel empathy for where they're at. Oh my goodness, you think you won. Don't you know that's not how life works? You think you can just come in and be violent towards us and you're going to win? Don't you know that's not how God functions? Like, this is going to rot you from the inside out. Woe to you. Like this, you think you can just do whatever you want and it's not going to have long-term impact on your soul? That's not how this works, man. Woe to you. This is the point when you realize that all of life is connected. All of life is deeply connected. You can't go through life violently and abusively and taking advantage of others and feel like you win. That always catches up with you. That always rots you from the inside out. And so you have this passage where God's like, hey, Habakkuk, I know it feels like in the short run that these people, that what's happening is they're going to get away with it. But woe to them because they're trading the short run, they're trading the long run for the short run. But your people, they're going to go through this hard time. They're going to go through this. They're going to be captives, but they're trading the short run for the long run. Because yes, they're going to go through this time. It's going to be hard and it's going to test them. But in the long run, they're going to come back to me. This is God's way of saying, I am life. I am the only source of life. I am the only source of truth. I am the only source of meaning. Outside of me, there is no meaning for life. There is no. They think that they're happy. They're dying inside. This is what I'm going to do to call you back to me. So they are trading the long run for the short run. But you and your people will be trading the short run for the long run. And this is how life works. And we don't see it in the moment. When you're going foot by foot, it doesn't feel like I'm trading the short run for the long run. It doesn't feel that way. It feels like that person, they got away with it. They are better. They won. They're even. No. God's like, no. That's not how it works. Be sure that if you do these things, it will catch up to you. And we're in this. This is God's answer to this big question. It's this big question of why do bad things happen to good people and why does it feel like bad people are getting ahead? He's like, I know in the moment it feels that way, but that's not how life actually works. And so you, when you have in this moment, when you're feeling this tension, when you're beginning to believe these things, what does he say? He says, the just will live by faith. If I give you a foot, you take that foot. If I give you light to your path, you take that path. You align with me. You stay reliant on me. You focus on me. I will get you through this season. This idea of living foot by foot or light to my path and that being faithfulness. I can remember one season in my life that was more this than any other season that I can think of. Like there was a season in my life when I felt like for months, like all we had was a foot at a time. I got one foot, I'm going to walk that foot. And I got one foot, I'm going to walk that foot. I got one foot, I'm going to walk that foot. And it was about a year after we got my son. I have an adopted son. And he's from Haiti. And about a year after we got him, we were doing some tests because there was a season in his life when he was probably didn't get the nourishment that his body, a growing boy, needed. And so we're doing these tests on him physically to try and figure out, you know, is everything okay with him? Is everything going well with him physically? If anything is not going well, can we like fix it? Can we head it off at the pass before life and time goes on too far? And so we were in this season where we were giving all these tests and tests and tests and tests, and he was getting all these shots all the time, constantly. And we went and took this test to see to see how his brain was developing, because sometimes it can impact malnourishment can impact brain development. And we got this call from the doctor at our home we weren't expecting to get. He's like, hey, come back in, see me, I want to talk to you about something. When you're hearing from a doctor, you're not expecting to hear from a doctor. Like, that's never good news, right? They don't just like call you on a Friday at 7 because they want to chat, right? And so we got this call. Come in Monday, we want to talk to you about something. So we went into his office and he showed us this picture. So this is, I don't know if you can see it, this picture, but there is this little, there you go, there's this little spot that was in the center of my son's spinal cord. And they're like, yeah, so there's like a spot in your son's spinal cord. We're not sure what it is yet. If it's cancer, it'd be inoperable, so come back in a month. And he walks out of the room because doctors are the worst people on the planet. No. He's like, yeah, he's a human. He's trying to escape that moment. He knew what he was saying, and it made him feel weird. And so I just think he said, hey, by the way, we don't know what this is. We came up in the scan. If that's cancer, it'd be inoperable. And he left. He's like, make appointment with my nurse on the way out. So we made an appointment. And that month of our life, it was 1 foot by 1 foot. Man, it was like, we're getting up today, we're going to do this day, and we don't know what tomorrow holds, but I got 1 foot, so I'm going to take this 1 foot. All right, it's a new day. We made it through yesterday. I'm not going to look at tomorrow. I'm going to look at right now. Let me take this 1 foot. And every day, God was faithful, and he gave us that foot, right? And we think that those are the moments when God's most inactive, when he's the least present. But every single day, he shows up, and he gave us that foot. And so we said, all right, there's a new day. We got to get through our day. Give me 1 foot. I'm going to take this foot. And so finally, a month comes, and we go in, and we take some more tests, blood tests and everything else. And they're like, we still don't know. Come back in 3 weeks, okay? Come back. One day, I got 1 foot to take. I'm going to take this foot. I'm going to take this foot. I'm going to take this foot. I'm in a lamp to my feet moment. I'm going to take this foot. And we're going back to the doctors again. And I remember in the car ride up, we're like, man, we're going to go take some more tests, and they're going to tell us to come back because these people are like, they're pointless, right? We're not going to get new information today. Like, we knew, we were sure, we are not going to get new information today. We go in. At this point, it's been like 6 weeks since the original conversation. And he says, well, we figured it out. Praise Jesus. All right, at least we know something. He said, your son's brain is too big for his skull. Okay. That's new information at least. What do we do with that? And he's like, well, actually, you have more skull that curves under than you actually need. And so we can remove that curve of the skull, and it won't impact him long term. And what's happening is because his brain's too big for his skull, the spinal fluid is collecting at this pressure point, and it's forming a cyst. And so if we remove this curve of the skull, there's a chance that cyst could naturally dissipate. That's the moment when lamp to my feet switches to light to my path, right? And I now know the next season of my life and what it looks like. And so then it's not lamp to my feet, 6 inches, 6 inches, 6 inches. It's like, all right, we have a plan. We know what the next 6 months looks like. So let's walk this plan. But you have to be faithful in both seasons. Just because I knew a plan doesn't mean the plan had worked out. Just because I had a plan and I knew what the next season of my life looked like, it didn't mean that I didn't have to rely on God for that season too. It just meant I had clarity. And so we went in, we had the surgery, they removed the curve of his skull, and we had 6 months. We had to go back. And they were just going to do a scan and look at that his spinal cord and see, like, all right, well, what's going on in the spinal cord? Did it fix it? If it didn't fix it, we'll start over. We'll figure something else out. Let's just see. How's the spinal cord look? You see this picture? This is my son's face right here, kind of like framing it. If you look in very closely at the screen, on the right you have 6 months earlier, and on the left you had what his spinal cord looked like in that moment. And what had happened? And you actually kind of see, like, there's a little more bone there behind his head, you know, where, like, they kind of took some of that extra bone out and his brain had more space. The spinal fluid had the ability to go through the spinal cord, and the spinal fluid cyst naturally dissipated. And he had no long-term ill effects from this. At this point, you're like, doctors aren't the worst people in the world. They're the greatest. You know, you're like, how is this possible? I just cut part of my son's skull out and he's better. Like, what kind of wizardry is this? But that season of life, it was a lamp to feet. And that's what faithfulness looked like. Let me just get through today. And we think that those moments in life when it's like, let me just get through today. Let me just get through this. I got 8 hours at work today. It's going to be terrible. I don't know how I'm going to do it. And you say, Jesus, just get me through these 8 hours. And that is strength. That's not weakness. That's strength. That you saying, Jesus, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I'm going to give this over to you. You be with me. I got 6 inches. Meet me in these six inches. That is strength. And so if you want to live this faithful life, if you want to be what God talks about here in Habakkuk 2, you know, he says, but the righteous will live by their faith. When God meets you and he calls you into a season, be faithful in that season. And if he says, I hear his 1 foot in front of you, be faithful in that foot. What I love about this chapter of the Bible is how the chapter ends. Because Habakkuk 2:20, what you have is this is actually Habakkuk's response. And so Habakkuk asks a bunch of questions, God responds. Habakkuk asks a bunch of questions and God responds. At the end of Habakkuk chapter 2, Habakkuk has one verse of response. And this is Habakkuk's response to God. He says, "But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him." What Habakkuk realizes is that in those moments when you feel like all hope is lost, when God is distant, when he is far from me, when he's lost control, when he doesn't see me, when he's not listening to my prayers, that God answers and God gives him, answers him. It's maybe not the answer that he wanted, but he does answer. And then Habakkuk's response is, man, God is still in his throne. Let all the earth be silent before him. And silent here is not like, be silent. It's like when words fail you and what you're looking at and viewing is beyond the reaches of language. It's like, God, he didn't lose control. He's still on his throne. He hasn't forgotten me. He's still involved. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. And there are moments in your life when this is going to be all you have. This is the only thing you can do. This is the only thing you can say. God, be faithful in this moment. If you give me one foot, God, I will walk that one foot. If you give me path, I will walk that path. And that is strength. And that is you being faithful. Let's pray. God, thank you for this passage, and thank you for the way that your whole word tells one story. Like, we got to look at you having this conversation with Habakkuk, and then gain understanding about it from, you know, Psalms and what's going on. And God, I thank you that in those moments when it feels like you are most distant, you are most involved. When it feels like life is spinning out of control, you have it. You are very much in control. And God, if we could go through life and feel like that the people could be violent to us and abuse us and take advantage of us, and they would just win, like that would tear us down emotionally, and it would tear away. But that's not how you function. You are more faithful than that. You say that these things, these moments, when it feels like evil wins, that this is not how it works, that evil does not win, that you are always still in control. And God, I thank you that you are still on your throne, that you are still in your temple, that we can stand before you, and you are so good, you are so beautiful, you bring such meaning that it takes the words right out of our mouth. All we can do is stand before you and soak in that you are a good and involved and loving God. God, you are faithful. You will never leave us without light. God, there wasn't a third part of that verse where it says, and there are seasons where we're in darkness, because that's not your nature. You will always at least be a foot out in front of us. And so I thank you for that. Thank you that you are a God who is involved and you are a God who loves. God, if there are people here today who are going through foot by foot seasons, be with them. And we know that you will be, but let them feel your presence in those moments. And God, if we have people who are in a season by season moment, when they can see down the path in front of them, give them the strength to take that path, to be faithful in that path. Give them the wisdom to know that you are involved in that path too. Thank you for this book of Habakkuk. It's unfamiliar to many of us, but the experiences are our experiences. Very familiar. We love you and we thank you in your name. Amen.